Welcome to Nightlights. I'm David Brent Johnson. Scott LaFaro was a driven and disciplined innovator who changed the role of the bass in jazz and who stepped into jazz legend with a single day of recordings made with pianist Bill Evans just 10 days before LaFaro's death at the age of 25. How did he make that impact? I'll be featuring LaFaro's recordings with Evans, as well as with Victor Feldman, Ornette Coleman, and others. And I'll be talking with bassist and Indiana University Jacobs School of Music faculty member Jeremy Allen. It's the J Bass, Scott LaFaro, coming up next on Nightlights.
Thank you. Paul Bodie and on drums, Bill Evans, the young man that everybody is talking about. And don't forget, we're right here at Birdland at the Jazz Corner of the World, Broadway at 52nd Street.
The Bill Evans Trio in 1960 with Scott LaFaro on bass performing Autumn Leaves. I'm featuring the music of Scott LaFaro on this edition of Nightlights. LaFaro was born April 3, 1936 in Irvington, New Jersey, and he grew up in Geneva, New York. His father was a musician, and LaFaro played clarinet and saxophone in high school. He didn't take up the bass till he was 18, but in 7 short years he would redefine its role in jazz. Often described as intense and driven, aloof but fun-loving, LaFaro hurtled through life fueled by his passion for music. In his girlfriend's high school senior yearbook, he wrote, "For the rest of our lives, we'll live, eat, and sleep modern jazz. There is something about music that I could never explain to you. I just go crazy when I hear it, and I get the wildest feelings when I myself play it. I know that I can become a top-flight performer, and I will realize that ambition." And he did. Contemporary bassist Christian McBride says Jimmy Blanton, Duke Ellington's bassist in the early 1940s, who pioneered the bass as a soloing instrument, is the Old Testament, and LaFaro, who brought it to the forefront as a rhythmically freer, more conversational instrument, is the New Testament. Bassist and Indiana University Jacobs School of Music faculty member Jeremy Allen on the bass in jazz before Scott LaFaro.
In some ways, the bass in a jazz group was like a big bass drum that you could tune on the fly. The bass provided rhythmic support. So if you think of a bass drum playing 4 quarter notes to the bar, a bass was kind of doing the same thing, mirroring that 4 quarter notes, but also playing the roots of chords and outlining the harmony, usually with 4 beats to a bar, a walking bass line. So that was what was really common. Oscar Pettifer, Jimmy Blanton, Ray Brown, Paul Chambers even, who was a contemporary of LaFaro's, that's kind of how they played. That was their fundamental, like their basic role, you know. So that was the scene into which Scotty's playing kind of came and upset things.
LaFaro ended up extending the role of the bass in another direction.
He decided that he had a melodic voice to add to the proceedings in any given situation, and that he would not feel himself bound by convention to providing a, I say merely supportive role. That's not really fair, because it's not to belittle the supportive role of a bass doing what was standard. But the way that he heard music was that he wanted to be in the mix, playing, interacting with the ensemble.
LaFaro with pianist Bill Evans and drummer Paul Motion performing Evans' Waltz for Debbie from recordings made at the Village Vanguard in the summer of 1961. By the time of this gig, LaFaro had covered a lot of ground in a short period, starting with Buddy Morrow's Big Band in 1955. His style had evolved with astonishing rapidity, perhaps the basis for his remark to jazz writer Martin Williams in 1960 that the only early recording of his that he cared for was an album he'd done with pianist Pat Moran. We'll hear one of those sides now, along with something from an early session with vibraphonist and pianist Victor Feldman. First, Scott LaFaro and Pat Moran doing I Could Have Danced All Night on Nightlights.
Thank you.
Scott LaFaro playing with vibraphonist Victor Feldman and drummer Stan Levy on Serpent's Tooth from Feldman's 1958 album The Arrival of Victor Feldman. LaFaro before that with pianist Pat Moran and bassist Gene Gammage doing I Could Have Danced All Night from the 1958 LP This Is Pat Moran. LaFaro became known for his fierce devotion to the bass, which he practiced constantly, and his reputation spread throughout the jazz world in the late 1950s as he played with a wide variety of artists, big band, small group, West Coast, hard bop, and avant-garde. Jeremy Allen on Scott LaFaro's sound.
He had a shockingly advanced technique on the bass. This is the thing that makes bass players' jaws drop when they first hear him. He could play faster, he could play longer lines, he could play over a greater range. He just did not find himself held back by some of the physical limitations of the instrument in the way that people sort of traditionally were. So he developed a solo voice that was not distinguishable from that of a horn player. He really just did not recognize any limitations. So his solos are very long. They contain all manner of very clear ideas, which he develops, you know, compositionally. He just plays very fast when he wants to. And he has a lot to say on any kind of given tune. He really was thinking melodically, and not so much melodically as he was thinking of the whole. I hear him, it sounds as if he's thinking of the whole performance of the band, and he's aware of everything that's going on. And what comes out is a bass player who is kind of leading the show, stepping up into the spotlight and really shining, but also being supportive when he needs to. And I know that when bass players first heard him when he was on the scene, it was just one of those paradigm-shifting moments. People said, oh, you can do that on the bass. I never had dreamed that was even possible.
Thank you.
Trumpeter Booker Little doing BT's Minor Plea from his eponymous 1960 album with Scott LaFaro on bass, Wynton Kelly on piano, and Roy Haynes on drums. LaFaro before that featured with Stan Kenton's big band in 1959 on Bernie's Tune. I'll have more of the music of Scott LaFaro in just a few moments. Production support for Nightlights comes from Landlocked Music CDs and Vinyl, offering new and used music, DVDs, turntables, and more. Located at 202 North Walnut in Bloomington or online at landlockedmusic.com. And from the Laughing Planet Cafe and Soma Coffee House, offering San Francisco-style burritos, coffee drinks, and 100% fruit smoothies made with locally grown and organic ingredients, on the corner of Kirkwood and Grant in Bloomington, Indiana. I'm David Bren Johnson, and you're listening to The Jade Bass, Scott LaFaro, on Nightlights. I'm featuring the music of bassist Scott LaFaro in this edition of Nightlights, and although LaFaro is best known today for his dynamic association with pianist Bill Evans, around 1960 he was also playing and recording with another highly influential jazz artist of the times, avant-garde saxophonist Ornette Coleman. LaFaro appears on Coleman's epic free jazz album and on a quartet date as well. We'll hear an excerpt from that date of the tune The Alchemy of Scott LaFaro, and then LaFaro duetting with Eric Dolphy on bass clarinet from Gunther Schuller's Jazz Abstractions album. Scott LaFaro in two avant-garde settings on Nightlights. Thank you. Scott LaFaro and Eric Dolphy doing a bass-bass clarinet duet on Variant 3 on a theme of Thelonious Monk from the album Jazz Abstractions. LaFaro before that was saxophonist Ornette Coleman, an excerpt from The Alchemy of Scott LaFaro from the album The Art of the Improvisers, recorded in January of 1961. A few months later, Scott LaFaro, aged 25, played a two-week gig at the Village Vanguard in New York City with Bill Evans and Paul Motion. Riverside Records recorded the final gig on Sunday, June 25th, little knowing that the subsequent LPs would become some of the most influential records in jazz history, setting the template for the modern jazz piano trio. It also offers us the fullest document of LaFaro, playing at a new level of creativity and strength, bassist and Indiana University Jacobs School of Music faculty member Jeremy Allen.
If you listen to that complete Village Vanguard set and think about what he did in one day as a bass player, just the number of solos, solos on each tune, long solos, solos with really wildly varying material. It's not like he was repeating himself very much on this day. Then it's just astonishing how many ideas he had. And as I think Bill Evans might have said, you know, when he was younger, it just seemed like the ideas were kind of bubbling out of him without, he couldn't stop them, you know. And as he got older, he was able to really like capture them, you know, and sort of bottle them up just a little bit so that the energy was all there and he developed his ideas. And so when I hear him, what I hear, the first thing I hear is, this bass sounds great. I love the way this bass sounds. It sounds earthy, but singing. You know, the sound is dark yet clear. And then the second thing that I feel is an overwhelming sense of forward motion when he's playing. He's on the balls of his feet when he's playing. He's just right there in the moment. There's just music pouring out of him. So listening to him play with that trio, it's like drinking a big cold drink of water when you're parched. You know, it's just so refreshing. And the amazing thing is that it still is. It's one of those miraculous recordings that really still sounds like that today.
Bill Evans Trio performing Scott LaFaro's composition Glorious Step at the Village Vanguard on June 25, 1961. Jeremy Allen on the new ground LaFaro had broken with Evans and drummer Paul Motion.
It's probably important to differentiate Scotty's playing with the Bill Evans Trio, which is really where he shook up the world with his concept of a rhythm section, and his playing with everybody else, because it wouldn't be fair to say that he was not able to fulfill the standard role of a bass player. And of course, we've heard many recordings where he just lays down the time and he's got a big sound and a strong pulse and he plays 4-4 and he fits the band that he's in perfectly. So whichever group he was in, he did the thing that he had a vision for that band. So when he was playing with Victor Feldman, it's pretty straight ahead stuff, you know. When he played with Stan Getz on that Sextet album, you know, and they do a samba and he just lays it down. When he plays with Ornette, he has a very clear vision for playing free jazz and free music. But the thing we remember him for primarily is what he did with Bill Evans, and that group was a group of three sympathetic individuals who felt that they were all on equal footing. And so what they ended up doing was playing tunes in tunes of the kind that anybody would play, but there was an interaction between the piano and the bass and the drums, and instead of having the pianist up front as a solo voice with bass and drums just supporting in the background, now everybody was kind of conversing. It was contrapuntal. You'll hear the piano play a line, and then Scott will echo that line, or he'll play something right off of it. Or he will choose to start playing a melody in the middle of the piano solo, which Bill Evans will then have to react to, and it will take his solo somewhere else.
The Evans Trio had reached an unprecedented level of musical empathy. Here they are at the Village Vanguard performing Scott LaFaro's composition, Jade Visions.
Thank you.
Bassist Scott LaFaro performing his composition Jade Visions at the Village Vanguard with Bill Evans and Paul Motion on June 25, 1961. A week later, LaFaro played with Stan Getz at the Newport Jazz Festival early in the morning on Thursday, July 6, driving back from a friend's house in western New York State. LaFaro apparently fell asleep at the wheel and hit a tree, killing him and his passenger instantly. The jazz world went into shock. Bassist Ray Brown, who'd heard LaFaro at the Newport gig, told Downbeat magazine, "It's going to set the instrument back 10 years. It will be that long before anyone catches up with what he was doing." Bill Evans was devastated and hardly played piano at all for the next 6 months. 5 years later, he talked to an interviewer about Scott LaFaro.
His progress seemed to accelerate, and it became more and more rapid as we look back now, as he approached the time of his death. And I don't know whether that's fatalistic or what, but I don't know what would have happened if he had lived, because progressing at the rate he was, Lord knows where that talent would have gone.
His death was certainly one of the greatest losses in the history of jazz.
And I mean, I just can't comprehend death, and there's no way for me to evaluate it or to speak about it because I just can't comprehend it. As far as I'm concerned, he's alive. I mean, I knew him, and when I think about him, I think about him as alive, and he's not here at this moment, that's all, but I can't comprehend death.
And Scott LaFaro's death was a physical death, but I think that his spirit will always live on, and certainly he's inspired other bassists who've come from his mold, if you can say that.
He's inspired other instrumentalists as well as other bassists, because he was a constant inspiration to me.
Closed with Bill Evans, Scott LaFaro, and Paul Motion doing Detour Ahead, the complete Village Vanguard recordings 1961. Thanks for tuning in this edition of Nightlights. Special thanks to Jeremy Allen. Production support for Nightlights comes from Landlocked Music CDs and Vinyl, located at 202 North Walnut in Bloomington or online at landlockedmusic.com, and from the Laughing Planet Cafe and Soma Coffee House on the corner of Kirkwood and Grant in Bloomington, Indiana. You can listen to other Nightlights programs and view playlists on our website at indianapublicmedia.org/nightlights. Nightlights is a production of WFIU and part of the educational mission of Indiana University. Christina Kuzmich, executive producer. I'm David Brent Johnson, wishing you good listening for the week ahead.